From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The big joint congressional report on pre-9/11 intelligence failures was finally released today, but what was blacked out of the report might be as important as what went into it. Tonight On Point, investigating what went wrong and why it led to the deaths of thousands of Americans. We begin in Washington with a closer look at the joint report of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees. Josh Meyer covers in terrorism for the Los Angeles Times. He spent the day digging through the 800-page document. I asked him what the big takeaway will be from the committee's findings.
Well, it's hard to say. There's so many things about this report that seem newsworthy. We were all expecting it to be rather dry and that there to be not a lot of news breaking in this, but there's a lot of elements of this that are interesting, one of which is that the Joint Inquiry staff believes that the best chance to unravel the September 11th attacks was lost because the FBI and the CIA, particularly the CIA, failed to let each other, and then particularly the San Diego FBI field office, know that two of the suspected hijackers were in the country and that they were mingling with sort of the Muslim population, including people that were already under investigation by the FBI.
On that front, is there an assessment of the changes that have taken place in these institutions, FBI and CIA, since 9/11, or is this all looking back?
Well, there's some of that in here. There was a list of recommendations and calls for reform that was included in such an early version of the report that was circulated publicly in December. And so FBI Director Robert Mueller and CIA Director George Tenet say that they have addressed many of those concerns and calls for reform and that they're working towards fixing them, specifically upgrading the FBI's intelligence gathering capacities. They say that they're sharing more information now, that their computer systems are better and so on and so forth. But there are a lot of people that say that they have a long way to go and that this report really underscores grave problems within the system that still exist.
Does the report reach any conclusion about whether or not 9/11 could have been averted?
Well, if you read the media reports on what's been leaking out over the last couple of weeks, half of them say it does and half of them say it doesn't. We talked to several people that were closely connected to the joint inquiry and people that wrote the report today, and they said that their assessment of it is that 9/11 probably could have been averted had the CIA passed along information to the FBI, had the FBI passed it along to its field offices, connecting the dots, as has been said before. So, yes, they believe that this could have been averted.
And in terms of the points at which the ball was dropped, we're hearing the sense in this report of guilt but not blame, as though, yes, mistakes were made, but no one's head is going to roll. Do I read that correctly?
Yes, you do. One of the questions I've been asking for a long time, but specifically over the last few days, is who in the CIA dropped the ball in terms of not passing along the information about two of the potential hijackers to the FBI? For instance, the CIA knew, I think it was in early 2000, that two people attended a meeting in Malaysia who were very bad guys who were linked to al-Qaeda, and they never called the FBI to have them put on a watch list until August of 2001. Those two guys turned out to be two of the hijackers, and by the time the FBI had been told to put them on the watch list, they were already in the country.
And then this bigger question, do Americans now have the full story of what preceded 9/11?
I don't think they do, for a number of reasons, both specific and general. And I know there's already calls for more to be done. Certainly there's this new independent commission, which is going to be taking the ball and running with it, hopefully, although some people say that they've taken the ball and stumbled with it in terms of getting to the bottom of this. But there's a lot of questions. For instance, in the report today, there's about 28 pages of redacted information about Saudi Arabia's role, potential role in the terrorist attacks. I mean, the Saudis insist that they played no role at all, but the report raises many interesting issues about whether or not some of the hijackers received funding from Saudi Arabia, whether or not there were Saudi operatives in the United States who might have known something about this, and so on and so forth.
Who decided what information would be blacked out in this report, and what's the justification for the redactions, the blackouts?
Well, there's been some people that are very public about their unhappiness about that, including Senator Bob Graham, who's running for president, and I think Eleanor Hill, who's the staff director of the Joint Inquiry staff, has also been vocal about the fact that they tried to get the CIA and the rest of the intelligence community and the Bush administration to declassify many elements of the report that remain classified, including the Saudi Arabia part.
I want to understand exactly how that happened. Congress prepared this report, it gave it to the White House, and then the White House took the black pencil to it, or how?
Well, many people were given versions of the classified report, including the Senate Intelligence Committee, the House Intelligence Committee, certain people in the White House, for instance, like the National Security Agency and so on. So there was a prolonged period of negotiation between the intelligence community and their bosses, which is the White House, and the Joint Inquiry staff over how much of the report should be released. So So there was a give and take over 7 months, and it's clear that many people feel that a lot more should have been released. And some are saying, including Senator Graham, that some things were not released, including Saudi Arabia's part in all this, not because of national security concerns, but out of fear of embarrassment.
Is it clear from the report what agency or person insisted on blacking out which items?
No, it's not, but I think it's pretty clear that a lot of this is the intelligence community, but it's also the FBI. It's hard to say. And there are people saying that the White House played a role in that as well. But, you know, as I talked to Richard Clark this morning, who was the White House counterterrorism czar for about 11 years, and he's prominent in the report as being one of the few people who has been complaining for years of inaction and miscommunications and problems, and before 9/11 that there was going to be a major attack. And Clark told me this morning that he said, you know, you can't really point the finger at the CIA or the FBI or even the White House. He said everybody screwed up. He mentioned just the CIA or the FBI because he was the White House. but there's other people that say that the White House played a role in that as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of finger-pointing going on.
What about the much-discussed presidential security briefing on August 6th, 2001, I think by Condoleezza Rice of President Bush?
Right.
If I understand correctly, that references to that have also been deleted. Was there specific conversation that might have hinted that something was coming here?
Well, we've been reporting on that PDB, as they call it, for more than a year now, I think, about what the president might have been told.
That's deep, you know, background.
Right. And what we were told by the White House was that it was a summary of all the potential things that were of concern to the counterterrorism community and so on. We don't know exactly why they would withhold that information. We do know that they are withholding a lot of information and saying that it needs to remain classified for reasons that are, according to the experts, highly suspect. I mean, Senator Graham himself was the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and he's been very vocal about saying that much of this report that remains classified should not be classified.
So we've got 800 or 900 pages, and you're saying, Josh Meyer, that Americans still don't have the whole story. When, how might Americans look forward to knowing the full tale?
As Robert Mueller, the FBI director, said about a year ago, he was talking about the Lockerbie bombing, the Pan Am 103 bombing.
Over Scotland, yeah.
Over Scotland. And he said that even now, 14 years later, I think it is, that there's still pieces of information that are trickling in, that they still don't know the full picture of that terrorist attack, and that it could take decades for people to get the real picture of what's going on. But clearly, they missed the real picture before September 11th, and that's what this report's about.
Any other particular details that jumped out at you, Josh Meyer?
Well, I think one of them was the efforts by the Clinton administration to go after bin Laden and the failures to do so. The report is very critical of the fact that Clinton and Bush have never launched one single attempt to get Osama bin Laden and the top leaders of al-Qaeda, except for the one cruise missile strike in 1998 by Clinton. But it notes that Clinton commissioned several warships and submarines to patrol the Arabian Sea for several years and armed them with cruise missiles so that in the event that they could get good intelligence on where bin Laden was, they could send the missiles in and take them out, but that they never got good enough intelligence from the CIA as to where to fire the missiles.
But it suggests that even in the Clinton administration, Washington understood that bin Laden was a real threat that they wished they could deal with.
Oh, absolutely. It shows for sure that they thought he was an extreme threat, but it also shows that they never got the specific amount of intelligence needed to really go after him.
Josh Meyer, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Josh Meyer covers terrorism for the Los Angeles Times. He spoke with me from Washington. For the past 7 months, a joint panel of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees has been wrangling with just about every tentacle of the federal government over what should and should not be made public in the big 9/11 report. Today, it's out. Some say it's damning. The intelligence agencies say there's no new news here. The point of the investigation was to find out what went wrong. The report's answer? Mistakes were made, leads were dropped, warning signs were overlooked. 9/11, it suggests, could have been avoided, but no one seems to be held responsible for the fact that it wasn't, and much goes publicly unsaid, blacked out, redacted. Do you feel like you're getting the whole story here, the complete and honest truth? Were the blackouts justified? Could the attacks of 9/11 have been stopped? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me tonight in the studio is Jim Walsh of the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Jim Walsh. Walsh, welcome back.
Thanks very much, Tom. Happy to be here.
Good to have you. And joining us from Washington, Gail Chadwick, congressional reporter for the Christian Science Monitor. Hello, Gail.
Hello. Good evening.
Good evening. Thanks for joining us. And also with us tonight from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, and hello to our guests.
Gail Chadwick, take us in here first with the drumbeat in Washington today. We just heard from Josh Meyer, but you're watching the reaction today as this came out on the Hill. And you watched in the months and weeks as all the wrangling went on over what would be in the report. How's Congress feeling about what it's delivered to the American public today?
Well, I think everyone has been struck at just the complexity and the volume, the interest in this report. We have three presidential candidates who had reactions almost immediately after the report was released. Senator Edwards, who was calling again for a overhaul of the FBI and a new domestic intelligence agency. Mm-hmm. Senator Lieberman, who reminded everyone that there's now a new independent commission that had better get more access to material.
This is doing a follow-on report to this one, which was to come out next March or something like that, Gail.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. I think it's May, actually.
Okay. All right.
And then Senator Graham, who, of course, is repeating his criticisms of why, for example, Iraq wasn't mentioned in this report, and that's where we're going to war. So I think there were a lot of opportunities for those with a political agenda to get in quickly and see something in this report.
It is interesting, 800 pages and no mention of Iraq.
Not a one. Mm. What I found particularly moving was to watch the families when the report was officially released at 2 this afternoon.
These are families of 9/11 dead who were in Washington for the day?
In Washington. And remember, the whole point of having this investigation, the senator said, was to meet, you know, to satisfy the families. Mm-hmm. And just talking to them, were you satisfied? And I think they were all struck by the blank pages, especially concerning what we all assumed to be Saudi Arabia.
Jim Walsh, first reaction to what's come out of the report today. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at every single page, but I know you've been digging through it all afternoon. Top of mind for you as you see what's been accomplished here.
Well, a couple of things. I would back up and say I finally understand what it means to be a Harry Potter fan. You know, like Harry Potter fans, right. I've had to wait almost 2 years for this volume. And then the publication day finally came, and it was with much anticipation. And then I downloaded it and then spent the rest of the day reading through almost 900. It's really over 800 into 900 pages. So it is my Harry Potter.
But you're not levitating yet.
No. There'll be no movie, I doubt. But
maybe. Well, maybe there will be. What jumps out at you?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, it is dense. It is packed. It is interesting. It's not just drab government speak. And I think some of the findings are shocking. Some of the big findings, some of the small findings are shocking. A small finding, it mentions in the report that the FBI has concluded that 66%, that's over half of its intelligence research specialists, are, quote, unqualified. I thought that was pretty shocking.
To do the job of intelligence
research. To do the job, exactly. Mm-hmm. More broadly, there was a particular finding, and if you'll indulge me, I'll just read a tiny bit of it. It's finding 17. And this is what it says. It says, setting aside everything about connecting the dots, could have we prevented it, could have we not, it says this. Despite intelligence reporting from 1998 to the summer of 2001 indicating that bin Laden's terrorist network intended to strike inside the United States, the U.S. government did not undertake a comprehensive effort to implement defensive measures in the United States. And it goes on to say, with some explanatory language, they had suggestions that bin Laden would attack in the U.S., perhaps with civil aviation, assassinations against U.S. public officials, use of high explosives, attacks on Washington, New York, and the West Coast, on and on. In other words, they didn't know what was going to happen, they didn't know when or where, but they thought something was going to happen, and nothing was done.
A lot of dealing, pretty explicit, a lot of information, that is, detail. Jack Beatty, but is it fair to say this should have been prevented? This should have been put off. It's 2 years later now. We're looking back. Is it fair?
Well, I think it's fair. I mean, we have to find out what happened. We have to have accountability. This is a democracy. What leapt out at me was, and Mr. Walsh was just raising it, this how early they knew about planes and buildings. Condoleezza Rice said last fall, "Oh, I didn't know about planes and buildings." And you have to wonder, suppose they had told the public that this was a possibility. Yes, it would have discouraged some commercial travel. But look what happened in Pennsylvania. Those people knew that plane was going down. And what did they do? They saved maybe hundreds, thousands of people.
They stood up and took action. We're talking tonight about the long-awaited congressional report on 9/11 and the intelligence failures that let 9/11 happen. Do you feel like you've got the full story now, the whole honest known truth? You can join the conversation, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the long-awaited congressional report on 9/11 out today and the intelligence failures that let 9/11 happen. My guests tonight are Jim Walsh of the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, joining me in the studio. From Washington, Gail Chadwick, congressional reporter for the Christian Science Monitor. We're joined also tonight by our news analyst, Jack Beatty. You can join us as well. Is America now, almost 2 years later, taking 9/11 seriously enough? Has the country really been made safer? And what about accountability? Should heads roll here? Whose heads? And is it reasonable for so much of today's report to be concealed? Blacked out, redacted is the word they use. Are the blackouts for national security or for covering someone's backside? Whose backside? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jim Walsh, in particular, there's this discussion of how many people related to the hijackers were, in fact, on the FBI's screen and or known to the CIA before this happened. I'm reading here something like 14 people known to the FBI had dealings with four of the hijackers. The CIA knew a lot about two folks on the FBI screen that they hadn't told the FBI, so the FBI wasn't perhaps sufficiently focused on them. Is this the old communication problem? And I guess the bigger question, is it reasonable, in looking back, to say they should have done this? It was kind of a different world then, wasn't it? A more innocent world.
Well, it was certainly a different sort of world in terms of the political priorities at the time. You'll remember back to that summer, the summer of 2001, that all the talk was about missile defense. There was nary a word about terrorism or those sorts of issues. And the chief national security priority for President Bush at that point was preventing rogue states from having ballistic missiles, something virtually unrelated to terrorism. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't a priority. In fact, the report says specifically, for example, it says that the inquiry interviewed budget officials from the FBI, and they reported that, quote, counterterrorism was not a priority for Attorney General Ashcroft before September 11th, and that the FBI faced pressure to make cuts in counterterrorism to satisfy other priorities. So people weren't thinking about terrorism, or at least some of the government officials weren't, but others were. And you're absolutely right, they weren't communicating. When this all started, we focused on the so-called Phoenix memo. Mm-hmm. And now we find that there are lots of dots. There's Phoenix, there are the lack of watch listing, a variety of issues.
The Phoenix memo remind us?
Phoenix memo, you may remember, is that there were FBI agents in Phoenix who found this flight training rather suspicious and had contacted FBI headquarters for permission to pursue it and to encourage the pursuit of it, and nothing ever came of it. It just sat and nothing was done. But you have the Phoenix memo. You have the lack of putting these folks on a watch list so that they were able to get into the country, mm-hmm. even though they were there was concern about them long preceding that. The big one that was talked about today and talked about earlier was this idea that two of the hijackers were living with an FBI informant in San Diego.
I mean,
that's bad. And then, of course, there's we haven't even talked about Moussaoui, who was, of course, being held by officials, but they didn't get a permission to go and check his computer for mm-hmm. what would have been probably incriminating information. And on it goes. And a lot of it is a lack of communication. And it's not just in some cases, it's a lack of communication that reflects poor structures. In other cases, it's bureaucratic politics. They did not want to share the information with their organizational rivals. Mm-hmm. There is a rivalry between the National Security Agency and the FBI and the CIA and the other players.
This is our sandbox you stay out.
It was turf war, and the result was information did not get passed on.
Gail Chadwick, how do you see the political context of the time? There were other priorities that summer, as Jim Walsh says, as the nation walked blindly, fatefully toward 9/11. And yet, we read in the report, as Josh Meyer pointed out, that the Clinton administration already had been very focused on trying to get Osama bin Laden, had kept warships and submarines off the coast of Afghanistan and the Middle East, hoping that they could pinpoint him and make an effective strike at him. So that's an expensive thing to do. So was there a realistic awareness of the threat that simply wasn't being communicated because it wasn't convenient for it to be communicated? Or was there a willful blindness? Was there simply an ignorance that got broken for everyone on 9/11?
I really think that it has a lot to do with the confidence that the country had come to place in its technological capacity. Now, there are a lot of reasons for that. We were having agents that were being killed off at a prodigious rate in parts of the world. There were budgetary reasons to cut back on it. But this did seem like a solution, and there was almost a worshipping of the high-tech angle.
You mean that we just look down from satellites and listening devices and not actually be there on the ground?
That's right. As we've just discovered very painfully in Iraq, you know, there's no part of the world with as many eyes from high up. But to have our forces arrive and discover that we really didn't know that the phones didn't work. We really didn't know that the bureaucracy was in as horrific a shape as it was because we didn't have human intelligence on the ground. I was really struck by one case here. I've been thinking about it all day. It goes back to the San Diego FBI handling agents. Mm-hmm. And it's a part of the report that looks at people known to the FBI with whom the September hijackers might have associated. And one of them is identified only as a business manager. We know that he came under the FBI's attention because he met the brother of someone connected with bin Laden in a parking lot. Mm. So the agent calls him up and he says, look, we need to talk to you. Can you come to Los Angeles? And he answers that it would be a strain for him to travel to Los Angeles. And so the agent asks his home address, and he doesn't give his home address. Result, the agent closes the investigation.
Well,
and it's
that
kind of very human example that, to me, is so gripping about this study. I mean, it's a little mistake, but it testifies to a whole culture of, as the staff who worked with this material most closely put it, a lack of good, hard, aggressive, creative analysis and investigation.
And on the other
goes beyond that one case. Mm.
And on the other side of that culture, a changed world. Jack Beatty, no heads marked to roll here. Guilt, not blame, as someone put it today. Is that appropriate? A lot of Americans died. The whole context of interaction with the world seems to have been turned upside down. We've got 800 pages, and nobody's walking the plank. Is that right?
I think people should walk the plank. I think it should start with Director Tenet, and I think there's something in the report that practically says furthermore, the Director of Central Intelligence was either unable or unwilling to marshal the full range of the intelligence resources, et cetera, et cetera. That's pretty explicit. But, you know, this 28-page gap about Saudi Arabia could well become the 18-and-a-half-minute gap of this administration. I allude, of course, to Watergate and to the missing portion of the tape.
Nixon tapes.
Nixon tapes, which, of course, they blamed on on Mrs. Woods, Rosemary Woods.
The secretary did it.
Yes, yes. But, you know, you have to say to yourself, well, why would they cover up a Saudi official, a Saudi government participation in this? And by the way, Bob Baer, the ex-CIA agent, and just written a book on Saudi Arabia, said this morning that the Saudi government is honeycombed with people who are, in one way or another, connected with al-Qaeda. So why would the Bush administration, if with all this, you know, arrows pointing at Saudi Arabia, why would it not surface this? Well, Saudi Arabia has $1 trillion on deposit in our banks, and it's there as a kind of make-weight, you know. It has $1 trillion in our stock market. And before we invaded Iraq, we had to go to them and say, look, if there's a disruption in the oil flow, will you increase it? And they said, sure, sure. I mean, we do know a few things about this country. According to Baer, if there were an election tomorrow there, Osama bin Laden would win it hands down. Why? Because he is a reformer in the context of that society, bizarre as that may seem. And he may have allies all through the government who want, in the bin Laden way, to provoke a U.S. intervention in the Middle East that will go so bad for us that we will pull out of Iraq or out of Saudi Arabia, out of the region, and then he will have that regime all to himself. Of course, we have intervened since in the Middle East.
But no mention, but for a page in this very long report. Gail Chadwick, what can you tell us about this months and months of wrangling that went on about what would be in and what would not be in the public version of this report? It was complete in December. We're just getting to it now in July. Give us a sense of that backroom brawl over what would be made public.
Well, the staff who were involved in it described it as a torturous process, but one with a lot of interesting wrinkles. A Porter Goss, who was the House chairman of the Intelligence Committee, is a former CIA agent, and apparently was, you know, some people who, when they mention that, say, oh, well, that just proves he's complicit with the agency. In fact, both Democrats and Republicans say that he was a major force in getting a lot of material declassified because he knew the agency so well. He knew intelligence so well, he could really push them hard on it. Another thing that helped, they had, I think, 22 hearings in all. 9 were open to the public. Mm-hmm. And in some of those 9 hearings, people said things that the agency, intelligence agency, would rather have classified. And then the staff could go back and say, but wait, this is already on the public record. So
right.
Let's declassify it. The other thing, aside from blacking out material, when you look at this report, you'll see that a lot of it is in brackets. That means that some word or some phrase was changed inside. The staff say not to change the meaning, but just to make it acceptable to the agencies. And that's really what it was about. Very, you know, skilled people on both sides fighting hard for a name, a line, a word, a phrase. And in fact, a good deal of the report falls in that general category. It's not just the blank pages that are noteworthy. It's all the bracketed material.
And to protect what, Gail? Is there a consensus that indeed this was to protect national security sources, or was this to protect backsides and political futures?
I'm sure it's both. To what degree? You know, we could be waiting decades to really get to the bottom of this. It could take that long.
Jim Walsh, what about what's not there?
Well, it's interesting. We've mentioned the parts that have been redacted or have been classified, but there's other types of material that's not in the report. And, for example, there have been no interviews with Attorney General Ashcroft, no interviews with Condoleezza Rice, the National Security Advisor.
Fairly glaring omissions.
You'd think that if you wanted to get at the heart of the intelligence problems, you'd want to interview the top folks, and they are not interviewed for this report. It's really rather glaring.
Our callers want to join the conversation. I want to invite them in. John is calling from Pembroke, Massachusetts. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hello.
Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. I was interested in the briefing that Sandy Berger gave to Condoleezza Rice. I didn't think it was in August. I thought it was prior to the assumption of the presidency by George Bush, in which Sandy Berger detailed at length the concerns he had about Osama bin Laden, al-Qaeda, and so forth, and recommended a number of things that she needed to do and needed to do fast to keep the ball rolling because of partisan politics. And Condoleezza Rice so much as said so in an interview a good number of months ago in which she said, we just didn't trust them. So what...
Being President Clinton's people, including his national security advisor, Sandy Berger.
Yeah, she chose to view them not as being American patriots or as people who are concerned about America's well-being, but as people who are trying to set the Bush administration up for failure rather than doing the right thing. And I think that whole mentality has been pervasive in the Bush administration's approach to letting us know what needs to be done and playing a very partisan game rather than one that's really in the interests of all Americans.
Let us pick up on that, John, and thanks for your call. Jim Walsh, a couple of things here. One, the political context, two, the blame game before 9/11 even happened, and then the briefings. There was this briefing by Sandy Berger. There was the famous, infamous, whatever, August 6th briefing, I think, of President Bush by Condoleezza Rice, which, as I understand, is not mentioned in this report. What do we know about briefings, what was said, how explicit things were that may have been ignored?
Well, the briefing that the caller alludes to, that John talks about, the briefing when there was the handover of power from Clinton to Bush, that is mentioned in the report and is confirmed as having happened, that not only Condoleezza Rice, but her now famous number two, Stephen Hadley, was mm-hmm. also part of these conversations. And they were told that this is a big deal. You're going to be dealing with terrorism more than any other issue. And bin Laden is a big worry that you need to focus on. But, you know, part of it, you can hardly blame them in that every administration that comes to office thinks that the previous administration got it all exactly wrong. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, it's almost contamination. If there's the way you want to kill a proposal is to say, oh, well, that was like what Clinton did.
Though looking at intelligence issues going forward and at terrorism, that would seem to be one area, like the nuclear threat of old, in which administrations are going to have to cooperate and hand off effectively going forward.
I think that that's probably right. And President Bush did call for a reanalysis, taking stock of the bin Laden problem, the al-Qaeda problem. It's just that that process took so long that the final report was not prepared to the first week in September.
The August 6th briefing, that's the one that leaves people thinking, gosh, did they really know and just don't want us to know what they knew because they'd have egg on their face? Or is that unfair?
Well, you know, it's hard to know. It's certainly not unfair in the sense that this administration, more than most, has had a penchant for secrecy. They have really restricted the public's access to a variety of documents, and that started prior to 9/11, but certainly accelerated after 9/11. And if you're a secrecy-prone administration, then it leaves people wondering. It leaves them guessing about what your motivations are.
Dave is calling from Milwaukee. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi. Excellent program, as always.
Thanks, Dave.
The thing I want
even
to
the
say
kids
is
like
so
it. We love it.
One second. So many times, to be an informed citizenry, we have to look at so many different places to get information because you never get the whole truth. It's always bits and pieces. You go to the BBC, Reuters.
Right. So here's 800 pages. Do you feel like you've got it now, Dave?
Oh God! How can I disseminate 800 pages in their particular language? See, it's almost like Americans are treated like mushrooms. We're kept in the dark and fed what they want to give us.
So you're not, but I do. But yet, here's 800 pages, prized out with some effort by a lot of congresspeople and months of effort put into it. That is something, isn't it?
Well, absolutely, it's something. But it's what they want to give us instead of the truth. The truth is a very vague thing, but everyone wants to put it in their best light.
Jim Walsh, respond to Dave and his progeny.
Well, they sound like they're active progeny.
God bless them.
And I can understand Dave's skepticism about this. Again, I think in part brought on by the administration itself. Why do I say that? There are many of us who said right after 9/11 that we need a full and complete inquiry. If we are saying that bin Laden is going to attack us a second time and we know there are problems, then the number one priority was to investigate, identify the problems, and fix them. But we, unlike Pearl Harbor, we did not have a commission, and now it's 2 years later that we finally find out, and even with this report, which is really narrow in focus, it's really focused on the intelligence aspects. We haven't even begun to look at the aviation and other aspects, but just on intelligence. It's now 2 years later, and even that report is missing key interviews and 20% of the data that's, or 20 pages of data that have been removed. So, again, I don't want to feed any conspiracy theories here, but on the other hand, I'm sympathetic to folks who are skeptical about it, given the way that it's been handled so far.
So in your perspective, then, this is not the kind of upright, clean breast that might be required to put the country in a better position going forward.
Well, I think it's an excellent first step. Obviously, there's a lot of work that was done on this report. It's filled with interesting material. I'm going to read it. I have to read it at least twice. I recommend it to folks. Particularly, I recommend the back end where you have sort of the dissenting views, the critics who complain about the report. That's always a juicy part.
Jim Walsh's Harry Potter. Stuff. Stand by, Jim Walsh, Gail Chadwick, Jack Beatty. We're talking tonight about the long-awaited congressional report on 9/11 out today. Is Washington really cutting through political interests and business interests to protect the national interest here? Do you think 9/11 could have been prevented? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the long-awaited joint congressional report on 9/11 out today and the intelligence failures that let 9/11 happen. My guests tonight, Gail Chadwick of the Christian Science Monitor joins us from Washington in the studio, Jim Walsh of the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, and our own news analyst, Jack Beatty. You can join the conversation as well. Do you feel you've got the full story now, the whole honest, known truth? And can we handle the whole truth? Is America now winning the war on terror? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Pamela's calling from Sharon, New Hampshire. Hi, Pamela. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for your wonderful programming.
Thanks.
I first off just want to say that I want to express my sadness that we had to have this terrible event and loss of so many lives to have a wake-up call in getting ourselves organized to protect our country better and our citizens.
And Gil Chadwick raised it earlier, but the families of so many who died were in Washington today looking on, and while the whole nation has been hit, it's still those families who paid the direct price.
Yes, it's just a real heartache, and I express my sympathies to all of them. This is a question that I have that I had thought I heard some time ago, which may not at all be true, but maybe one of your guests knows.
Okay.
At some time in the past, I had heard that the Clinton administration was offered, and I believe it was by Yemen, I'm not sure, that they had Osama bin Laden and were willing to extradite or turn him over to the United States. And the response from the Clinton administration was that they didn't have enough on him or something like that.
So it was a chance missed right there. Pamela, let us pick that up. Jim Walsh, what do you know? Were there chances to actually have bin Laden? Could he have been picked up? I mean, was there enough of a record under U.S. law in the days when we weren't throwing people into pens in Guantanamo to pick him up? And the larger question that's raised there is Clinton administration responsibility. I mean, you know, the World Trade Center was attacked in 1993. There was a long train of planning for this that predated the Bush administration. Your thoughts?
Yes, but on the specifics of that, of getting bin Laden, that was a bit of controversy right after 9/11. There was sort of a part of the initial defense of the Bush White House was to sort of blame Clinton. That's a common theme that it worked in the past, and they used it in this case, saying, look, if these guys had gotten him, we wouldn't have had this problem. It turns out to be a little more complex than that, because we would have had to put him through a legal procedure that doesn't exist now. We have a completely different legal system for handling those sorts of threats today. On the more general point about Clinton, I think when we think about, you were asking the question of accountability, who did well, who did poorly, and it's really different categories. So there are folks like the CIA and Bill Clinton who took the threat seriously and took some actions. Director Tenet said he was declaring war on bin Laden back in 98, but that was not a message that was communicated to the rest of the intelligence community. President Clinton did more on terrorism than any president, modern president in history. He vastly increased the funding for counterterrorism. And as you alluded to, he took other sorts of actions to strike at bin Laden. Of course, as a result of the attacks against the African embassies and the coal and the other activities that al-Qaeda had been engaged in. So yes, there was action, both by the CIA and a concern about it, and by President Clinton. But within the confines that they were working in, the political and other confines they were working in, they weren't able to accomplish the job. One, I think, though, that what this report does is it basically criticizes both Clinton and Bush. It says there were things that both could have – more things that both could have done, in particular the ISAID Finding 17, that even under the Clinton administration, there was nothing – assuming someone's going to come after you, one way is to play offense where you go and get them first, but the other is to play defense to protect yourself, and we weren't doing any of that. No one was doing any of that.
And Gail Chadwick, what about the big Saudi Arabia piece missing from the report? Jack Beatty put the chip on the table. There is a lot of severe criticism out and around about Saudi Arabia, but very little in this report. Their ambassador to the U.S., Prince Bandar, said today that the idea that the Saudi government funded, organized, or even knew about September 11th is malicious and blatantly false. What's the rumble in Washington about this country and its government and its potential links to al-Qaeda? Are they still as lively and dangerous as Jack was suggesting?
Well, to my mind, this is going to be what has the most legs in this report, the ongoing focus on what the Saudis knew and when they knew it and what they did about it. Actually, when you look at this report carefully, there's rather a lot in it, despite the blacked out 26 or 28 pages on the Saudis. Let me give you a couple of examples. A U.S. government official said, and it's quoted in this report, that it was clear from about 1996 that the Saudi government would not cooperate with the United States on matters relating to bin Laden and, quote, there's very little prospect of future cooperation with regarding bin Laden.
That's fairly damning.
Yeah. Another example. Remember when the former FBI director, Louis Freeh, was testifying that the Saudis had been cooperative, very cooperative, in investigating the Khobar Towers attacks. By contrast, the committee, and this is in bracketed material, but there are letters there and not empty space, the committee heard testimony from U.S. government personnel that Saudi officials had been uncooperative and often did not act on information implicating Saudi nationals. Now, that's also, I think, that issue. Remember, this is not just a commission that gave its report, and now it will be filed. There's another one working right as we speak, the Independent 9/11 Commission.
And that's been clamoring for more access to White House data and materials.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They've learned from this experience. They've learned from the 7 months of wrangling over access. And I thought it was very interesting, although this didn't get much press, that the two directors of the 9/11 Commission, Governor Kaine and Congressman Lee Hamilton, mm-hmm. gave a press briefing earlier this month where they said, here's what we need to do our work. Here are the 15 or 16 agencies we're working with. Here's who has been cooperative. Here's who has not.
So they're naming names already.
Exactly.
Hmm. And Jim
right
Walsh,
in the middle of the investigation.
Yep. Jim Walsh, Gelchadik points out that there are criticisms of Saudi Arabia in this report, and yet there's that big chunk of real estate that's all blacked out, that's all redacted, 28 pages. What's your sense? Is that mainly, as Jack Beatty suggested, to protect the Saudis because of their importance to the United States, or to protect the backsides of Americans who may have relationships with Saudis, that is, of potentially even American politicians in power now?
Well, you know, it's easy to speculate about what the reasons are. My guess is that there are multiple motivations. Some of that blackout is no doubt attributable to legitimate national security issues. You know, you don't mention certain names of people who've confided in you because you don't want to expose them, that sort of thing. So I'm sure there's some of that that's mm-hmm. legitimate. Mm-hmm. Some of it may be protecting people's backsides. And we've seen that as a complaint. If you go and you read the dissenting views at the back of the report, you see that that allegation is actually made by one of the Congress persons who's in that report.
How specifically?
Well, he's saying that, look, we had folks testify and their testimony was, these are American officials, mm-hmm. their testimony was in the public domain. So it's not a sources and methods issue. It's not like it's going to compromise national security. Mm-hmm. That's already out there. Mm-hmm. But you didn't put their names in. You included what they said but didn't say who they are, even though they're Americans. And there was some sort of implication that there was some, you know, sort of political protection going on there. It is hard to say. Clearly, Saudi Arabia is a very, very important U.S. ally. It's oil, our security, providing security to them. And now we need their cooperation in the pursuit of al-Qaeda. And let's also not forget the name of another country, Pakistan. You know, a similar situation. How did the Taliban take power? Well, it was Pakistan's security service that set them up. And who was their best friend, the Taliban's best friend in Afghanistan? Well, it was Osama bin Laden. And why did we not press the Pakistanis more on this? Because they were our ally and we were worried about nuclear war between India and Pakistan. Mm. So you have conflicting policy priorities.
Jim Walsh, in brief, our time is running down. Are Americans being treated with respect in the after-tragedy consideration of what happened here? I mean, in a democracy, people deserve to know. Is this report an indication that Americans are being treated with the proper democratic respect due to a country that's been hit?
I would say two things briefly. On the content, I would say it's insufficient but a good step. Mm-hmm. I think it's a very good step, and I'm hoping that the broader national commission that will come out with the report in May will be able to build on this. So I think actually there's a lot of good stuff in here. But my complaint has always been the timing of it. We should have gotten this a long time ago. It took us forever, and we still haven't corrected these problems. We needed that time to make progress that we haven't made.
And Gelchadik, very briefly, is all of this going to roll right into the presidential campaign? Is this going to be sacrosanct or part of the wrangling over the race for the office?
Absolutely. It's part of the campaign. And I thought it was very ironic that as the report was being released, the Senate is debating how much to spend on Homeland Security. And you've got Democrats already lining up and saying, we need much more than you're spending. Republicans are refusing to spend it, and they're telling us already, if anything happens, we're going to remind you of this and come back and say you could have done more and you didn't. So it's got implications not just for the presidential race, but I would say all the congressional races.
All teed up right there. Gelchadik, Jim Walsh, thank you very much to you both for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gail. Gelchadik is congressional reporter for the Christian Science Monitor. Jim Walsh is with the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Jack Beatty, we've just got 30 seconds, but last word goes to you.
Well, you know, we talked about those backsides. We can start with the Carlyle Group, Jim Baker, George H.W. Bush, Frank Carlucci. We can start with Dick Cheney, Did Big Hal Burton Dale there, Condoleezza Rice.
The ties out to Saudi Arabia, you're describing.
Yes, that's right. Condoleezza Rice on the board of Chevron Texaco, which is part of a Saudi consortium. Nick Brady, the former Bush Treasury Secretary, also on one of these
and there
boards.
It goes.
I can go on.
Stay tuned. The links are many. Jack, thanks for being with us. In a moment, Vice President Dick Cheney defends the war in Iraq. This is On Point. In a rare public speech today, Vice President Dick Cheney picked up the defense of President Bush's decision to go to war with Iraq. Without mentioning the uranium issue, Cheney said it would have been irresponsible in the extreme to ignore intelligence on the threat posed by Iraq's weapons programs. Cheney's speech at the American Enterprise Institute came a day after the White House continued its more than two-week-old effort to explain the events leading up to Bush's debunked State of the Union statement that Saddam Hussein sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa. Here is an excerpt of Cheney's speech earlier today.
I've watched for more than a year now as President Bush kept the American people constantly informed of the dangers we face and of his determination to confront those dangers. There was no need for anyone to speculate what the president was thinking. His words were clear and straightforward and understood by friend and enemy alike. When the moment arrived to make the tough call, when matters came to the point of choosing and the safety of the American people was at stake, President Bush acted decisively, with resolve, and with courage. Now the regime of Saddam Hussein is gone forever. And at a safe remove from the danger, some are now trying to cast doubt upon the decision to liberate Iraq. The ability to criticize is one of the great strengths of our democracy, but those who do so have an obligation to answer this question. How could any responsible leader have ignored the Iraqi threat? Last October, the Director of Central Intelligence issued a national intelligence estimate on Iraq's continuing programs of weapons of mass destruction. That document contained the consensus judgments of the intelligence community based upon the best information available about the Iraqi threat. The NIE declared, quote, "We judge that Iraq has continued its weapons of mass destruction program in defiance of UN resolutions and restrictions. Baghdad has chemical and biological weapons, as well as missiles with ranges in excess of UN restrictions. If left unchecked, it probably will have a nuclear weapon during this decade." End quote. Those charged with the security of this nation could not read such an assessment and pretend that it did not exist. Ignoring such information or trying to wish it away would be irresponsible in the extreme. And our president did not ignore that information. He faced it. He sought to eliminate the threat by peaceful diplomatic means, and when all else failed, he acted forcefully to remove the danger. Consider another passage from last October's National Intelligence Estimate. It reported, quote, "All key aspects, the R&D, production, and weaponization of Iraq's offensive biological weapons program are active, and that most elements are larger and more advanced than they were before the Gulf War," end quote. Ladies and gentlemen, this is some of what we knew. Knowing these things, how could we, I ask, have allowed that threat to stand? These judgments were not lightly arrived at, and all who were aware of them bore a heavy responsibility for the security of America.
Vice President Dick Cheney speaking today to the American Enterprise Institute. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.